Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Monday, March the 1st. Can you believe that? The 1st of March of 2021. You know, gee, and we may just find out next week that there's going to be presidential debates, 2024 presidential debates happening soon. The time is flying, to say the least. As we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We'll talk about President Trump at CPAC. We'll talk about Governor Cuomo. We'll talk about the House just passed a bill that will never make it in the Senate. Dr. Fauci, it looks like his star is falling a little bit. Good old Dr. Fauci. President Biden authorized an attack, military attack last week. It was a short attack, but I think it was important to send a message. And it's interesting, the reaction. We'll talk to Bill about that. So lots to get into with our friend Bill today. And I thought we could begin, Bill, by telling you that we've had a lot of rain, but it looks like it stopped raining as soon as you came on the air, so you must be good news, Bill.
Well, I had spoken to Al Gore, and I've gotten a little help from him. He's out with a sandwich board today saying the end is near, it's worse than you think. One of the most interesting things that I find in covering the news every day and going through a lot of publications is I'm finding fewer and fewer really important stories, you know, things that really have to be said to the audience. I think we're kind of in a very strange period. Usually the first 100 days of a presidential administration are very exciting, filled with news, filled with commentary. This seems to be kind of the opposite. The president obviously is a man of some years. He has good days and bad days. I think the most important story I read last week was not about anything in the news necessarily, but a background report that Kamala Harris is beginning to inject herself into foreign policy, and the story suggested it was at Biden's urging. I can't believe that. Vice presidents usually don't get involved in foreign policy,
right,
in part because the president wants the country to speak with one voice. But you have this feeling that something is going on in Washington behind the scenes, mostly in the Democratic Party, and it's not good news for Joe Biden.
This was said during the campaign. That's right. And during the campaign, people brought it up, but of course he was hiding in the basement of his house, and not much was said. But why don't we start with President Biden, Bill, because he was in Houston, and this kind of ties into your story about Kamala Harris. He was in Houston on Friday, and, you know, presidents do that. They visit areas that have been affected. But normally when they come, Bill, they usually meet. They're more active. I don't know how to put it politely, because I don't like to make fun of people who may have problems, but they usually seem more engaged, more active. You know, they get around, they talk to people in FEMA, they'll say hello to some citizens. You know, they show a little bit more activity. In this case, he gave a speech. He messed up a bunch of names in the speech, and that's not necessarily a problem. You know, that can happen to anybody. It happens to me. But overall, and then they went to an interview with Univision, where his wife basically became the spokeswoman for what's happening on the border and the kids in cages and all of that. It left a lot of people worried about his physical condition, Bill, which is what you're raising in your last comment. So I think, you know, people need to talk about this. I mean, we're not talking here about the president of a third world country. We're talking about a man who makes ultimately a nuclear weapon decision, Bill.
Yes, and isn't it interesting that last week a group of Democrats sent a letter, I think, to the White House suggesting that there be new legislation which would require the president to go to other advisors to be specified if he wishes to use nuclear weapons. Now, that is a perfectly reasonable idea to discuss under any circumstances. You know, who has control over those weapons? I don't think there's been a control problem in the history of American nuclear weapons, at least not one that I am aware of. But because it was written on Barack Obama's, on Joe Biden's watch, it got a lot of attention. And it was, in a way, it looked like an insult to him that he may not be able to handle the situation. And with Kamala Harris reportedly getting more involved in foreign policy, having, for example, a weekly lunch with the Secretary of State, which is unheard of for vice presidents. Vice presidents right. usually do what they're told, and they stay away from things. But she has been known now to have, at the Secretary of State's request, at least that's what we're told, individual phone calls with foreign leaders. That is a very unusual role for the vice president. Even Dick Cheney, who was a powerful vice president, did not have that role. And
right.
that coming with the request to change the rules on nuclear weapons, coming with the belief that in the Democratic Party that he is not really their president, he's the president of the old party, a very, very sticky political situation. And you mentioned that the 2024 election isn't very far away, but the 22 election is almost on top of us. They will be preparing that election campaign within 7 or 8 months. It's always about a year before that they begin to campaign. There'll be many primaries in both parties, and I think the Republicans believe that if they can do well and get some kind of decent press coverage, that they can retake both houses of Congress, and I agree.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about President Biden, and you know, you mentioned Vice President Harris, because I mean, I remember watching a quick story, watching a documentary one time about Vice President Lyndon Johnson, who was apparently bored to tears because he had nothing to do. He was going to funerals, and he was doing all these things on the side that vice presidents do. But, you know, he, you know, was even thinking about leaving the ticket in 64 because he was bored being vice president. Then, in the case of Vice President Cheney, I think that was the case where President Bush understood how important Cheney was and brought him in because he really needed that input, since he himself didn't have a lot of foreign policy experience as a governor. But that was never, you know, you never heard about, you didn't hear about it differently. I mean, what you heard with Cheney was that Cheney had influence, but that everybody understood who the president was. In this case, you kind of get the feeling if there are people in the White House who are kind of like overlooking the old man. They're saying, you know, just talk to Kamala or bring Kamala in. Or maybe I'm being too cynical, Bill, maybe talk to Barack. He's the one running things. I don't know. Maybe I'm too cynical, Bill.
That's something that no, I don't think you're being too cynical at all. That's what we hear all the time, that it's really Barack Obama who's calling the shots. Or if not Barack Obama directly, Barack Obama through his team, which is still very much in power in Washington. If you look at the people surrounding Obama, again, I made the same mistake, surrounding Biden, they are all from the Obama presidency. If you look at the Iran negotiating team, it is the exact team that Obama used. So I think there is this feeling, you know, in domestic policy, the president seems to be having a great deal of difficulty with both parties. It's interesting. Last week he called in Republicans and began what he said would be a tradition of bipartisan meetings. Now, that is something that I think is very smart on his behalf. He understands he's going to need Republican votes for some things, that the Democratic Party is not really behind him, unless he comes out with one of these cockamamie left-wing crazy executive orders that have gotten a lot of people roiled, a lot of people who follow these things. I think he recognizes that the Republican Party is in his future.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that. But Bill, I'm really surprised at President Biden, how he got off, how he started governing, because I was expecting him to sort of tell, you know, the left wing of the party, look, guys, I love you, but I really cannot govern with only you. I need to have these other guys, because it's a 50-50 country, no matter how you slice it, and it's a 50-50 Senate, and some of you are not with me on issues like Manchin and so on. So I was expecting him to be to come off more centrist and more focused on COVID and drop all these other things that he – but it seems like in the first 30 days, all he's done is written executive orders to please – the left of the party and turn off people like you and me, Bill, at a time when he really needs us to get anything done, Bill.
That's exactly right. And I think he may be learning the lesson that everyone learns eventually when they deal with the left. The left can never be satisfied. The left is not a set of political beliefs. We've said it here before. The left is a religion. It's run like a religion. Their saint at one time was Barack Obama. Well, he's not in office right now, although, as we've said, he might be running things. But they may not have a true saint today, a true leader, but they do know that Biden is not their leader. He's a man who came into the Senate in the 1970s or the early 1970s. He is considered something of a moderate. No one really knows some of his views, but he is certainly not a member of the left. And he did do those things in the first few weeks, I think, to pacify the left, and he found that they were never pacified.
Mm-hmm.
You have AOC in New York basically running her own country, and I think that she does think it's her own country. You have mm-hmm. some of the new people coming in who are now members of the Squad, and the original members of the Squad are just as fanatical as they used to be. There are some new people in who, you know, are kind of pseudo members of the Squad, and it's becoming very racialized, which I think is a very, very bad thing for the country. I mean, you should have as broad a coalition as possible. But I think, you know, we seem to be in a kind of a vacuum. The mm-hmm. press coverage is heavily left-wing. But we knew that was going to happen, and I think the press is losing some of its influence. I think that their almost non-reaction to the serious charges being made against the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, has hurt the press and reminded the American people that the press is not what it used to be, that it's not really right. covering the news. It's kind of trying to make the news, and it's not working out. I think that the 22 election will be extremely important and very bitterly fought. And one of the elements of that is going to be the role played by former President Donald Trump.
And we'll talk about Trump in a minute at CPAC, but I wanted to stay with President Biden and the message that you've been saying here for the last few minutes. He authorized an attack last week, a military attack. Now, I tend to give presidents the benefit of the doubt, things like this. I mean, it was a quick attack. It was not, you know, we're not sending troops or anything. And you know, I said, okay. I thought Lindsey Graham came out. Most Republicans came out and said, okay, we understand why you did it. We don't have any problem with it. But the opposition is coming from his side. And even this congresswoman from Minnesota is saying, well, isn't this a sovereign country? Why are we bombing? So, you know, he's catching it from the other end. Or his side of the aisle, Bill, which kind of supports the point that you were just making, that you're never going to please these people, because if you give them what they ask for, they want more, Bill.
That's exactly right. And let's not forget the fact that Lyndon Johnson was brought down not by Republicans, but by his own party. He decided in early 1968 not to run for president because he didn't have support in his own party. It was nasty what they did to him and wrong, but they basically knifed him in the back. It was led by the Kennedy family. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And, I mean, they called him a warmonger. And I was in an apartment of a New York Democratic leader the night that Johnson made a speech saying he would not run again, and they were jubilant. And this was their president. And by the way, a president who was responsible for the civil rights laws. I mean, that itself was a monumental accomplishment. And they just couldn't wait to get him out, and they were ready to dump Humphrey, who was his vice president, as presidential candidate. And they tried. You remember Eugene McCarthy ran, and Robert Kennedy, before his tragic assassination, ran. Others wanted to run, George McGovern. Nobody really wanted Humphrey, but Humphrey had so many years of building up support in the party establishment that he got the nomination and did come within a few points of winning. Had the campaign gone on another week, he probably would have been elected president. But after that, I mean, the party just slid all the way to the left. It's doing the same thing today. Nominated George McGovern in 1972, who lost by the biggest landslide in American history against the incumbent Richard Nixon, who wasn't even a popular president. I mean, nobody particularly liked him, but they liked McGovern a lot less. And then, well, the rest we all know what happened. But you have a very similar situation today with Biden. The difference is Biden isn't hated. Johnson was hated as part of the party. The Democrats have learned to hate very well. Biden is not hated.
Not yet, Bill.
Not yet.
Because there are some issues on the table that could make him very unpopular. And President Trump spoke yesterday a little bit about that. But, I mean, President Biden right now, he may be very disliked in a few months if he reverses, for example, if he reverses the decisions that he made on the pipeline for economic reasons or on the border. I mean, he could be very unpopular with these same immigration activists and environmentalists and all of that who are supporting these executive orders. So he may be very unpopular. But I do want to bring up for a second, Bill, President Trump was at the CPAC convention. Wanted to get your reaction to it. I felt, number one, I think he came out too soon. I would have preferred for President Trump to have waited maybe 6 months, 9 months, because I think the issues that he was talking about yesterday, the gasoline and the border, all of those issues are only going to get worse for the Democrats, in my opinion. So had he waited six months, he would have had a better case. The other thing, too, is that I think he spoke too much about the election. I think he's got to put that behind him. I agree that there were some problems with the election, but it's over. I mean, you got to move on. And I think he brings up the election, he takes up oxygen from more legitimate issues, Bill.
I have to agree with you on that. I think he's got to realize the election is over. Biden is president. A number of Republicans have come out also and said, we have to accept the fact that Biden is president. The election is not going to be rerun. The lawsuits have largely failed. I think that he had some very legitimate issues that he raised about the election and about our electoral system and about the corruption that exists within it, but I don't think that there were enough votes there to flip the election, and that is now being widely recognized in the Republican Party. The Republicans are on to the 2022 election. They are really determined to win, and I think that another thing that I found objectionable about Trump's speech last night, and many things were wonderful. He went through the issues. There's nobody better at analyzing an issue than Donald Trump. And explaining why Biden was wrong. But then he started attacking other Republicans. Now, he may have had good reason for it. He's angry at McConnell, and McConnell was angry at him. But you don't have to bring it up. That should not be a part of his speech right now. His speeches should be on the issues about why the Republican Party is best. There were some Republicans there who said it's one party. He is the titular leader of the party, but he is not the party. And I think he is in for a rude awakening if he tries to be too much the party. He's got to run again if he wants to run again, and he will have to start from scratch. He will have great support within the Republican Party. How much he will have nationally, we don't know. But I wouldn't be shocked if he ran, if he had competition. I don't think he's going to. I think he thinks he's going to be crowned like a king. I don't think that's true at all. It's interesting that at CPAC they do a poll, and he came in first in the poll for 2024 as the candidate most preferred. The person who came in second was Ron DeSantis, who was very popular in the Republican Party. And if Trump falters in some way or does not show strength in the polls that count, which are the polls of the independents and those Democrats who might want to join next time, there might be a real horse race. I think he should not be anticipating an easy run of it.
Right. And also, there's another person who wasn't there who I wish was there, and that's Vice President Pence, who I think, in my opinion, would be an excellent candidate for president, because I think he can communicate. He can explain what Trump did, sometimes even better than Trump. But he doesn't bring the, you know, he doesn't bring that personality that, that Trump has. But I mean, I think overall the man's energy continues to amaze me. He connects with the crowd. But let's not forget, this is a conservative crowd, Bill.
Very. Very. It's more conservative than most of the Republican Party. It's a very partisan crowd, and they are wounded by what happened in the election. I think many are still shocked that Trump lost, and they are they're loaded. They're ready to go. And what Trump has to be in the next year is a cheerleader for his party. He cannot make it about himself. If he makes it about himself, he's going to just cause resentment. And then if the party loses those houses, there'll be an uproar against Trump by at least an important faction. He's got to work with people. He's got to forget personal grudges. You know, Tip O'Neill, who had been Speaker of the House of Representatives in the early 80s when Reagan was president, and of course Tip O'Neill being an old-style Democrat, he said something very wise about politics. He said, "Only amateurs stay mad." And he's right. You cannot stay angry forever. You've got to get back to operating and operating in the common good of your party. And that, I hope, is a lesson that Trump will learn if he hasn't already learned it. Because if he doesn't learn it, he can create a catastrophe rather than a victory.
Right. And then the two issues that I think will play well for the Republicans in 2022 are going to be the energy issues. You know, a lot of people wondering why their gasoline keeps going up, and they're going to blame President Biden, I believe. And then the situation on the border, which is a real disaster. I mean, I think it's a shame that, you know, these kids are being used like they're being used. I mean, there are criminal elements behind these caravans and stuff like that, and it seems like it's just a horrible thing that these kids are being used. I think a lot of these immigrants are being used too. So he doesn't need to talk about the election, Bill, to talk about those two issues.
That's exactly right. When he is on the issues, he's at his best. When he talks about himself, he's at his worst. And again, you know, you cannot be seen as a guy holding a grudge. He should learn from Ronald Reagan. You know, Ronald Reagan invented the 11th commandment, "Thou shalt not speak ill of any other Republican." It was a good commandment because there was dissension in the party then. People forget that in 1980, when Reagan ran for president and won the nomination, there were many Republicans who were against him. And they, in fact, they wanted to put Gerald Ford, former President Gerald Ford, on the ticket as the vice presidential candidate and sell the ticket as a co-presidency. It didn't work. I'm glad it didn't work. But once the election was held and Reagan was president, he was president of all the people, and he was the head of his party, and he didn't carry on old fights.
No, he didn't, and I think we have to thank President Ford for refusing to participate in that co-ticket, because he had a lot to do with saying no, and actually had a lot to do, apparently, as I understand, for encouraging then-Governor Reagan to pick George Bush back in 1980, and that turned out to be a good decision for the party and especially for the country. The idea, I mean, I remember that whole convention, Bill, that night that they were talking about this, you know, a president and a co-president, and I kept asking myself, how is this going to work? There's no constitutional basis for that, and we don't have a prime minister in the United States. We have a president. We don't have a prime minister. So I don't know. I'm glad that it didn't work out, but I understand what you're saying, that they were some very heavy divisions at the time in the party. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about Governor Cuomo, the House bill, and a few other things. Be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, as we like to do once a week. We're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I wanted to bring this up again. I'm not sure if we talked about it already, but if we did, please tell me. But President Biden apparently is going to be meeting virtually with the president of Mexico, and they're going to be talking about some things, the border. I find that interesting that they're having this meeting. I mean, I guess presidents meet all the time, but the timing of it is very interesting. Maybe President Biden is starting to hear from Democrats running in 2022 that this border crisis is not going to be helpful to them, Bill.
I think that's probably true. If you were a moderate Democrat running in a swing district, you know that illegal immigration is a really a one-sided issue in the country. Overwhelmingly, people want regulation at the borders. They want enforcement of the law. I think when you see those Republican ads in 2022, beginning with a picture of how a hole was blown in the border, or how there's a big hole in the fence because the Democrats stopped funding the border wall, and when you hear that that wonderful slogan that Ronald McDaniel, the Republican national chair, came up with. I think she only used it once, but it's wonderful. And she said, look at the condition of our country. The borders are open and the schools are closed. And that is a very powerful statement. I think people realize that the Democratic Party is in the hands of the teachers' unions. They want their kids back in school. They've now read enough to know that it's safe for the schools to reopen. And they see very little action being taken. And this is not something they favor. You know, children are always an important ingredient. They don't vote themselves, but their parents vote. And they don't really like the way their children are being treated, being used as political pawns.
That's right. No, you're right. I mean, and then, of course, as I think we said this last week or a couple of weeks ago, you have in the country this amazing contrast between the public teachers union saying we cannot go back to work because it's unsafe. And then on the other hand, you have Catholic schools and other private schools that are working, and it seems to be safe. So obviously the optics, as they like to say, are not good for the teachers union at the moment. But if President Biden, and I want to go back to what you said before about doing business with the left of the party, if President Biden realizes that he made a mistake on the border and starts to pull back, I mean, AOC and all these other people are going to go nuts with him, Bill. They're going to go crazy against him.
They're right, yes, and they may threaten to form a third party. I mean, I think that's in the cards. I also think that you may have a situation next year here in New York that could get very bloody politically, and that is Chuck Schumer, who is they call him the majority leader. He actually isn't the majority leader. There is no majority. But they're calling him the majority leader because on organizational matters, the Democrats bring in Kamala as the 51st vote. And so they're calling him the majority leader, very senior senator. He's up for re-election. He is exactly what the left hates.
Mm-hmm.
He is a moderate, thoughtful, traditional liberal Democrat, interventionist foreign policy. Was opposed to the Iran nuclear deal, is Jewish, is pro-Israel. The left doesn't like that. They really don't. And there is talk that AOC is going to challenge him for the Democratic nomination. Now, how far she'll get, I don't know. The word is that the upstate Democrats are perfectly pleased with Schumer, and that most of the downstate Democrats are too. But this faction on the left may not be satisfied with that, and they may run against him if only to scare him. But it will split the party and cause tremendous bitterness.
Well, it will also force Schumer to say a lot of stupid things to compete.
Definitely.
And he's just going to be.
Them.
Yeah, he is. He's already saying them. Well, let's talk about New York a little bit, Bill, because your governor, who I hear from pundits and so on, may not be the governor for too much longer because of all the problems he's having. Now he's got a new problem. He's got a woman problem, which is, of course, in the age of Kavanaugh, you know, women are always telling the truth. The standard was that if a woman accuses a man, she's never lying, unless, of course, she's accusing a Democrat, I guess. But how bad is it for Governor Cuomo in New York? You're there. You're reading the local press. How bad is it for Governor Cuomo in New York, Bill?
Well, in the last polls were taken about a month ago, I believe, before these two women came forward. And they showed him still with majority support in the state. Things turn slowly here. It's a very Democratic state. Down somewhat in support in the Democratic Party, but still with majority support. I don't know what it would be today. I don't see any polls being taken. The press is solidly in his corner. They may chastise him and, you know, slap him on the wrist a little bit, the way they did with Clinton over sexual harassment charges, and then in the end support him. The Republican Party in New York is run by a group of undertakers who know how to handle death. This is a party. You don't even know who the members are. New York City is in terrible shape. It is primed for another Giuliani. And they don't even show much interest in it. I think, you know, when they get off the golf course on Saturday, maybe they'll do a little politics. But I think that the state of New York can see substantial gains by Republicans if they get busy, but they're not getting busy. Now, I should point out that the same is being said about California. You have a governor under siege who may be recalled. I don't think he'll be defeated, by the way. People don't understand. A recall doesn't mean you're not governor anymore. It means there's just another election. And
right.
He seems to be, you know, it's a heavily Democratic state. But there are signs in California of movement to the right. There were a number of Republican women elected to Congress in the last election from California. Some districts that we thought were gone are not gone. There is great discontent with the tax system. The state is in terrible shape, and the fact is that many of their Congress members are to the left of their own districts. So there may be some room in 2022 to at least scare the Democrats a bit and force them to spend money in California in 2024.
Yeah, and there's also talk of Rick Grenell running for governor out there. There's some talk about that. He could be a good candidate, but I'm a little concerned about somebody running for office who's never run for it. I mean, California is a big state, and, you know, running there is probably a little bit more complicated than running in a small state. So Rick Grenell would be a good candidate, but he's never run for anything before, Bill. That would be my only concern. I don't know of any other Republican out there. The mayor of San Diego apparently is a candidate, but I don't know much about him other than he's been making a lot of criticism of Newsom. But here's what I find interesting, Bill. I wanted to get you – go ahead and finish because I wanted to say something
I was going to say the mayor of San Diego is a solid guy. He's popular. Grenell, remember, is gay, which would be an asset in California for a Republican candidate. And he's a sharp operator. He is very Trumpian in his – pronouncements, but if people in the state begin to feel desperate, they may, you know, they remember when the last governor was removed or recalled.
Yeah.
It was Gray Davis in 2022 or so, and he was replaced by a Republican, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who of course came in with great publicity. I mean, he was a well-known figure. Not exactly experienced in politics, but he, on the basis of sheer personality, won the election. Now, the state is more Democratic today than it was then, but you never know what could happen. I would love to see the Democrats get scared about New York and California.
Well, I think the people there would benefit from a little change. I mean, everybody you talk to in those states, you know, has a lot of concerns. But I thought it was kind of funny. Somebody was saying this the other day, that as President Trump leaves office, and he's now off the stage, also coming out the stage are Governor Cuomo, Governor Newsom. So by the end of the year, I mean, you could have Newsom out of office, Cuomo out of office, and the cable news ratings in the tank, and President Trump enjoying all of this from Florida, Bill.
Oh, definitely, and I'm glad you mentioned that the cable news ratings, because they miss Trump. Now, I should point out something about Cuomo. he has these sex charges against him, which some Democrats are taking seriously because they have to. He also has a federal investigation against him. People forget that. He's being investigated for the nursing home deaths by the federal government. Now, I don't know how far that investigation will go under Attorney General Merrick Garland, who I think will be confirmed, even though he made a very weak appearance for confirmation. You know, in the end, the Attorney General gets to decide who gets investigated. And I'm not so sure that investigation will survive. But if it doesn't survive, that will be held against the Democratic Party, because Andrew Cuomo is now a national figure. And if somebody tries to stop an investigation into him, that creates an immediate controversy. It's a very fascinating situation. I think it is possible that he could be out of office fairly soon through resignation. And, you know, and that will not automatically end the federal investigation, but it may be killed, you know, for humane reasons.
Right.
You know, how
but
much
I
can you punish the guy?
Yeah, I just think it's kind of funny that, you know, here you have a situation where, you know, a lot of Democrats, my guess is that Democrats like Cuomo and Newsom and the people at CNN were hoping for Trump's reelection, because then Cuomo could run for president in 2024, Newsom could run for president in 2024, and CNN would have their ratings, you know, attacking Trump. But, you know, all of this is different now. All of this is different. I mean, Newsom, he may survive, but he's a weak political figure. I don't think he's a presidential candidate anymore. And Cuomo could survive, but I don't think he's a presidential candidate anymore. So maybe for them it may be better to either resign or get recalled, Bill, because I don't think they have much of a future beyond that, Bill.
Well, you know, it's amazing how political fortunes can change overnight. We've always said here that, you know, a month is two lifetimes in politics, and it is. The speed of the news and speed of the delivery of news. But we have a situation where both parties have many problems to solve, and we do not have a dominant personality other than Donald Trump. I mean, Biden, you know, he could disappear. This is not to disparage the man, but he could disappear tomorrow and nobody would know he was gone. And that's a sad situation. And I don't see them any great national wanting for another Obama figure. I see a national yearning for good government,
mm-hmm.
just good government,
yeah.
good solid
and not
government.
Necessarily. And kind of there seems to be, Bill, another thing I'm picking up too is there seems to be a yearning for results, not necessarily partisanship, but
that's
just
right.
Let's get things done. And I think that's
yes.
That's where I think the extremes of the parties may find themselves in trouble, because the country doesn't seem to be ideological right now. They just want to get some results. Well, let's talk a little bit about the House COVID bill. It happened Friday night. They were up all night. They voted for this, and it kind of, you know, they went through all of this, but it's not going to get done in the Senate. Much of what's in that bill is not going to make it in the Senate. So what exactly President Biden will be signing is a big question mark at this moment, Bill.
A very big question mark, and I think the American people are angry that it took so long to get a bill through for relief for people who need it. And the reason it took so long is that Nancy Pelosi didn't want it passed. She wanted to wait for a Democratic administration so she could get more and get more credit. I don't think she's going to get much credit. But it is a huge bill. The country can't afford these things. The country is in terrible trouble in terms of national debt, and people just don't want to believe it. They don't want to accept it. But the thing still hasn't been passed. There are very little of the bill really has to do with COVID relief. Most of it has to do with relief of the Democratic Party. Has a lot of these little Democratic gems in, giving aid to states that are faltering. Well, I think we ought to ask first why they're faltering. And a lot of them are faltering because they couldn't balance their budgets, and that they are so in debt to state labor unions and to pension plans, and yet they want to be bailed out, and they may well be bailed out. In the end, the Democrats may be able to get this passed. I think they're probably 1 to 2 votes short in the Senate. But if it's one, it's Manchin, and he may really be prevailed upon. He may say, Joe, do you want to hold back all that aid and be a pariah in your party? And it may be a convincing argument.
Well, let's see how that plays in West Virginia, though, because that's an entirely different state politically than the Democrat Party, Bill.
Oh, very different. And no, that wouldn't play well. But he's in a very tough spot. People say, he has a lot of power now. He has some power because he could be deciding vote. But there's Kristen Sinema in Arizona, who's turned out to be a very moderate Democrat. She may dissent. There's the senator from Montana. What's his name?
John
Tester. Yeah. He is another one. The heat may start being on the Democratic Party as people realize they're the ones in charge, and the public opinions at home will determine how those senators vote. There may be
an independent senator from Maine. I think Angus is his name, who caucuses with the Democrats, but he's not necessarily a crazy lefty. And you begin to wonder, at what point are people going to ask the question you're asking, Bill, which is, how are we going to pay for all of this? Because that's the question I'm asking. I mean, I'm looking at all these dollars that we're spending, and I'm looking at, you know, you look at Florida, you look at Texas, you look at other states, and we've recovered from the pandemic fairly well, our economies. And you begin to wonder, do you want to send any more money out to people who really don't need it? I mean, I don't have a problem with money being sent to groups or people in the country who work in certain industries, obviously restaurants, hotels, airlines. I mean, they've been very hard hit, and I have no problem helping them. But I don't think that everybody necessarily gets a $1,400 check. What's the point of that, Bill? We're just spending money we don't have.
That's right, and it now turns out that $1 trillion from the last relief package hasn't been spent. You know, don't you think we ought to use that money? It's already been allocated. And no, they want more. And, you know, people are going to see where the money goes ultimately if there is an honest press, and that is one of our biggest problems as a party today, is the collapse, really, of the American press, of the mainstream press. But it's going to be a very interesting time in American politics, and I think an extraordinarily contentious time. And what is absolutely lacking is real leadership. Now, people can say, well, there's one 900-pound gorilla in the room, and that's Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump has some of the best ideas of any person in politics. His leadership abilities are not what they should be, and because he opens his mouth a little too often. And on the Democratic side, I mean, is there this national wanting of Kamala? I haven't noticed it. I mean, I haven't gone out into the streets and people prostrating themselves saying, unless Kamala Harris is made president, I'm going to jump in front of that bus. I haven't seen that yet. You know, they may be jumping on a bus to get out of town, but I haven't seen that yet. There is really no one personality who is emerging as a national leader. Now, people can say, wasn't that the case before Reagan was elected? To a certain extent, that is true. He had to fight for that election and finally broke through, and broke through very well. But, you know, Reagan was a two-term governor, had a lot of experience, very well known to the public. I think you're going to see a lot of introductions in the next year, and you're also going to see people making mistakes, which is what's going to knock them out of contention. I think Nikki Haley did herself a terrible amount of harm by coming out against Trump. She could have just shut up, and she could have made a speech saying, he's a wonderful president. I disagree with some things, but, you know, if he runs, some people are already saying that. Even Mitch McConnell said, if he runs, I'll support him. You've got to get the party going in the same direction.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. But I will say one thing about Kamala Harris, Bill. I'm not sure if I was a Democrat, I'm not sure that I would rather have Kamala Harris as president in 2022 because, you know, Joe Biden has his problems. We talked about it. But he's kind of a likable guy. You know, I don't think he scares anybody. But I think Kamala Harris does have a very left of center reputation, and I think she would be a tougher sell in competitive district. So I'm not sure a lot of Democrats are hoping I mean, my guess is a lot of Democrats are hoping that Biden survives at least the 4 years, because I don't think she is a very popular figure, and I believe she would be very divisive, Bill. So anyway, that's just my thoughts about Kamala. I think she's not a likable person.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting that she ran for president, as you recall, in the last campaign, and she had to get out of the race before the first vote was cast, because after months of campaigning, she was at 3%. So her track record nationally as a national candidate is a very poor one, and she was selected for the vice presidency entirely on the basis of race. There was no other factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, the law was handed down that we want a woman of color as vice president, and she was basically the only one who was in real contention. But she tries to be active, she tries to be out there, but I don't think she has been in any way an asset to the administration. So
no, not at all. Well, no, but so I mean, I'm just a divisive person. I don't think she's. Hopefully we don't have to talk about that, but. She's not – I mean, if I was a Democrat, I wouldn't be crazy about having her on top of the ticket in 2022, particularly in competitive districts. Let me bring up a couple of other stories here before we go, Bill. It looks like Dr. Fauci, his star is not rising anymore. You know, for a while there, Dr. Fauci, like, walked on water. He was like – I felt that a lot of it was the media who I think would made Dr. Fauci into this – person who walks on water. By the way, I have nothing against Dr. Fauci, but I never thought he walked on water. Nobody does. And they presented Dr. Fauci as the reasonable alternative to the crazy Trump. But now it turns out that Dr. Fauci is having a few problems himself, and some people are even asking for him to go, Bill, which I think it's interesting, Bill.
Well, yes, you know, what happens in politics, as in every other walk of life, is you can wear out your welcome. And they love that spotlight. Once they're in that spotlight, they love it, and they start to talk. And if you're not used to politics, you start contradicting yourself. Facts started contradicting him, experiences of other countries, experiences of some of our states. And I think that he came into power, so to speak, on this follow the science bit, you know, from CNN, we must follow the science. And he, of course, was the chief of the Center for Disease Control, or the former chief, whatever it was. And he seemed like a knowledgeable man, gray-haired, serious. And he came in with Dr. Birx, who was a popular figure for a time, at least her scarves were. And, you know, again, not knowledgeable. Solid backgrounds. They weren't kooks. But he may have stayed too long, and he may not be the type to lead us through a crisis like this. People, especially on the school issue, which has become a very hot issue in many places, they're saying schools, as you pointed out, Catholic schools are open. There is no problem. Private schools are open. There is no problem. Why can't our kids get the education that we are paying for through our taxes? I think there is a lot of anger out there, a lot.
Well, the other thing, too, I always felt that Dr. Fauci made a big mistake in 2020. I have nothing against him. I'm sure he's a very quality guy, qualified person, I mean. But I think he gave too many interviews. And it would have been wiser for him to do what Dr. Birx did, which is to speak not that much. But Dr. Fauci would do these interviews with CNN and MSNBC and everybody. And then, of course, the reporters were not really interested in COVID. They were just interested in how much do you disagree with Trump? Because this is really about you versus Trump. And I think that, you know, it went too far. It got to the point where every question to Dr. Fauci was, well, how do you get along with President Trump? We understand that the two of you don't like each other. Well, he could have killed that right away. He could have said, look, I'm not a political person. I'm a bureaucrat, and I work for the president. Please don't ask me those kinds of questions. But he didn't, Bill. He went along with it, and I think it's backfired. That's my sense, Bill.
Yes, and you know, the attention span of the political public is very short. They see new personalities. They would like new personalities. And I also think that because of the vaccine, that we are beginning to see the possible end of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yes.
That is a story that is going to be a big story during the year. And I'm only hoping that we don't have a new pandemic. I am no conspiracy theorist, but I have always wondered, I've always had an uneasy feeling about where this thing came from and where it started and whether there was some intent. I have no proof whatever of any that this was done intentionally, but I don't want it ruled out. I want it to be constantly studied because
well, it certainly was
anything,
came. It's strange how it happened. I'll put it that way.
It certainly was. And also, remember,
all of a sudden you've got Trump on the verge of re-election with a great economy, and then all of a sudden you have a virus. Maybe a coincidence,
but maybe not. Well, also,
so,
you have something else here, and that is that what this pandemic has done is to show the world how the United States can be successfully attacked.
Well, that's true, too. That's true,
whether
too.
Whether it was
so,
or
you
not,
know,
it's not...
Yeah, no, you got people out there seeing
really
it.
Took,
yeah.
Yes.
No question about it. I gotta close with one, and this is kind of a funny but serious at the same time. It looks like the U.S. women's soccer team has decided that they're not going to be kneeling anymore during the American anthem, that it looks like they've decided that part of their life is behind them. And being a little cynical as perhaps we need to be, I wonder if the advertisers – had something to do with that, Bill, because the NBA has decided that the teams have to play the national anthem. So I'm beginning to wonder if maybe the advertisers are sending a message to these sports teams that, hey, you know, we're the ones who really pay your salary, or the fans are the ones who pay your salary, and they're not happy with all these stupid things you're doing. I wonder about that, Bill.
Well, actually, I think the latest on the soccer thing is that they reversed themselves. That the league league prohibited kneeling, and now they're going to allow it again. And that one of the members of the league's governing council was thrown off the council for making an impassioned speech in favor of America.
Isn't that amazing?
I mean, yes. Professional sports have taken a big hit in the last year, not only through loss of audience, I mean, you know, the stadiums are not full, but all these controversies that are so unnecessary. I wish they would stay out of politics. You play the national anthem for the country, not for a political party. It is a tradition. You respect other people's traditions. But I think that Kaepernick started something that was very bad, and that is having athletes as active politicians while on the field. And I think it had a very bad effect on sports.
I agree. I agree with you. And I'm sorry to hear about the soccer team. I thought they had settled that issue, but I guess that's another reason for me not to watch them now. And I wonder how many other people like me feel that way, Bill.
I think a lot do. I mean, ratings were way down this year. Well, of course, it wasn't as exciting. You know, when the stadium isn't filled and you're watching the Super Bowl play before 12 people, and you don't have that raucous atmosphere, which is what sports really are about. I mean, it's about the cheering and the excitement and the winning and the losing, and it turns into a debate about politics. That is something not good for sports.
No, not at all. It's not. We watch sports to get away from a lot of those things. We don't watch sports to have political debates, but I agree with you on that. Bill, have a wonderful week, and thank you so much, as always, for the great reporting you do at Urgent Agenda, and we'll keep up with Governor Cuomo at Urgent Agenda. We'll see if he survives our next show, Bill.
Oh, well, we have something to look forward to, don't we?
Yes, we sure do. That's right. Well, thank you. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you later, Bill.
Looking forward to it, Sylvia.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, always have a lot of fun checking back on the week with him. Have a great day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.